Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and assorted topics. And I thought tonight would be an interesting show on dealing with the evil consciousness and its plan for Earth versus God's plan, with a big P there. So when I say God's plan, that includes beings that are on the side of light, we'll say, that are more enlightened beings and seek to create more of a godly place than what, obviously, evil's plan for Earth is. And so I'm going to define everything so we don't have to get into a place where people are guessing at what I'm talking about. Also, this is not going to be evil in a religious context, because so many different religions have their own flavor of what evil supposedly exists. It's not going to be even evil's, we'll say, denotative version, which maybe some people who are not religious may think. And it is definitely an expose of the opinion and maybe even factual explanation, as I continue in tonight's show, that evil does exist, even though a number of people, particularly people who are usually atheistic, don't believe in evil's existence. You know? And I'll explain how and what evil is for that particular, we'll say, contesting issue. Because I think once it's defined the way I'm going to be defining it, and have done so in a number of shows before, very few people then doubt that, by my definition at least, evil doesn't exist. All right, so let me start off with just that subject. And that is that, by definition, I'm going to define evil as a form of consciousness that, by its own doing and own choices, has chosen to, or we could say even willed, which is like a consistent choice, to destroy God. Now, some people will say, yeah, but evil doesn't believe there is a God. Now, evil, in my definition, does believe there is a God, but as a means of deception, attempts to convince those who could be beguiled into believing that that there is no God, or that if there is evil, it doesn't have anything to do with God because it just rejects God entirely. But yet, that isn't what I'm saying. What I'm saying is evil, in almost all circumstances, strangely, believes in the existence of God, but rebels against that existence by choosing to try to destroy God. And you could say, well, if God is God, how can you destroy God? Because God created evil. Well, God didn't create evil. God created freedom, freedom of thought, freedom to develop or not develop consciousness, freedom to develop all types of elements of life, because God chose in itself to create the big issue, which is life, and what this show is really about, why life is. And evil chooses to destroy the life that God created because, strangely, it is more aware of God's purpose in creating life than most other people, and most people are. And that is that evil recognizes, and many people do not, that life is God's means, chosen means, of growth in itself and in the universe. So the universe would not grow, and God could not grow if there was no life created. And if that life wasn't given freedom to think and create itself in a multitude, infinite number of ways. So it is through the choice of God to allow something much less than itself to create itself as well, because God was self-created, and to follow in God's path, and then to choose, if it seeks to think in spirit, which is God's thought, or to think against spirit, and to think against God, and also to then seek, if it wants to, which is evil now, to destroy God's growth, which, in effect, destroys all of God's purpose, because if there were no growth to God, God would have no purpose in the universe. It would also mean that God would eventually destroy evil anyway. But the point is, that being aside, and that's a whole long thing we'll get to later in the show, but I think the point is, at this juncture, it's important to recognize that evil definitely understands enough about God to recognize that life is God's growth. So evil is destructive to life. Now you can say, well, isn't it part of life? Yeah, but it defines life in two ways. Life that grows as being a part of God, and life that grows from being apart from God, which is what evil is as well. So evil has found a unique way, its own niche, if you want, in the universe, of growing itself by being antithetical and against God. Antithetical means that its approach to living is against God's approach to life, and makes it into a unique class of life that grows by, over time, destroying other life and stealing life from other life. Eventually, if evil were to succeed in its plan, it would, much as a cancer might, or many other diseases, kill the host, kill enough of life so it could not survive itself, and in the end, it would be vanquished by its own taking of power, which is what it sucks from others to live in. It would take its power and it would use it up and not be able to continue to reestablish and grow, and then it would die. It's a very interesting process. It's a complicated one from the standpoint of the simplistic evil is just bad and does bad things, to, you know, bad people and bad life forms sometimes do bad things. Evil is a unique characteristic, as I've defined it, different from good and bad, different from right and wrong, different from most other religious definitions, because those oftentimes have human-tainted values. The way I'm defining evil is not based upon values. It's based upon what would be called operant means. So it operates a certain way, and that defines who and what it is, rather than because it does or doesn't like some form of behavior that makes someone evil. And you should be aware that this is very different in a different context as well. In Judeo-Christian tradition, somewhat replicated and or incorporated in either earlier or later religions from them, evil is indoctrinated as sometimes having some characteristics that are similar to my definition, but oftentimes having great numbers of additions that have to do with values of that particular religion in terms of right and wrong, good and bad, etc. That has caused many people who are less than fully committed to any specific religion to reject the religion sometimes, and to reject the concept of evil, because if a religion states something that is potentially untrue about something so big as whether or not evil exists, much less what it is, then it becomes a problem for people who actually have better means of thinking than most people, and in their reasoning power, they, by defining the evil along the traditional lines, come to the conclusion that the source of the definition is nonsense, which is the religion, because the religion, because the definition itself is contradictory and lacks enough credibility based upon all the wanton elements of good and bad, that it can be fairly easily rejected. And this is causing problems, because one religion that becomes embattled against another, it sometimes believes that to observe and control and to preserve its own values, it's okay to destroy life. Are you following me? And therefore, the religion in some forms, not maybe everybody with that religion, becomes evil. Isn't that strange? Isn't that an odd, quirky circumstance? But again, if someone were to, or others were to, adopt the more operant plan, operant definition that I'm trying to espouse tonight, and have in the past, even in the textbook I wrote in other places, then it becomes much more understandable, more conscious, to realize that evil is not an associated religious viewpoint. It is an absolute based upon one's behaviors. Now, thought does get involved. And I don't want you to think it's just the third part of God's mind that evil manipulates and changes, and we're going to get to that. But it definitely is true that evil prefers, and almost most of the time, exclusively uses the third part, God's mind, which is either intelligent activity, which evil doesn't do, or it uses unintelligent actions, but actions that are hugely powerful and sometimes tremendously destructive to life itself. So we need to recognize that that's how evil generally functions. There still is a thought factor, which I'm going to go into, and consciousness, which is part of tonight's show, evil's consciousness, and plan. Consciousness and plan are virtually the same thing for Earth. So we're looking at something that really has a almost a revelation in its context, and hopefully, after tonight's show, people will really get what I have for so long been talking about, and maybe they can participate more in trying to defeat this horrible, maniacal, menacing force in the universe. All right, so how did this all develop? Well, let's go a little bit into the historical side. Again, this is somewhat based upon things I've said before. I always add a little different ways of explaining things so that it helps people better understand. But evil came about because in God's plan for the universe, there has to be freedom of choice, freedom in general to think, freedom to act. If these freedoms are not generally adhered to, no matter what the overall thought of good versus bad is, it turns out disastrous, because God's growth is declined, and to significant amounts if it's pushed on people very strongly to do certain goods versus bads, and then the result can be some kind of horrible evil outcome. It invites evil in that does exist in man further. And it leads to the most, we'll say, egregious destruction of God's plan overall, because when others are forced to do anything, forced, even worse, believe it or not, to think in certain ways, the result of forcing thought, especially, which is spiritual, becomes anti-spiritual. If you're anti-God's thought, then the only thought that becomes available is that thought that is in some way, the antithesis of God. And so this is the very difficult problem. Humans are involved in this continually, almost on a daily basis. This enters into our lives in such amazingly complex and strange ways, sometimes very simple ways, but it's all around us. This is not some kind of philosophical question that is left only to those who are a mountaintop someplace meditating for most of their life to come up with. It's around us all the time. Let's talk about the founders of the United States, its Constitution, and its general, we'll say, philosophy. Most of these persons were either advanced, like accepted level, second level initiates, or third level initiates. Now, what does that mean? That means that they were either close to or had a very good understanding of evil, among other things. And what did they come up with in their plan for the United States? Well, to offset the urgency of governments to control thought and action, they wanted extreme limited government that protected the rights of the many overall, but mostly at the same time, simultaneously, protected more of the rights of the few. This concept is so hard for us to understand because it gets into what is known as the paradox of pairs of opposites and of, in this case, consciousness on a group level, or group consciousness, versus individuality. These wise people were so amazingly conscious that they understood that value and worked feverishly for a long time, months, to come up with both a constitution and eventually years come up with the country of the United States. The original country they came up with was not the United States. They came up with a country based on greater levels of federalism, meaning more distinct sub-governments running things with larger amounts of responsibility and control over the people, and less development of a central government. Now, that sounds like not a bad idea, and to a lot of people these days, they would like to go back to something closer to that than what we have presently. The problem was, until about 1787, 88, it was almost impossible to be able to do business, to have interactions, the third part of God's mind, in any way that was intelligent. It worked great for the spirit side. The spirit side of people was wonderfully protected by this huge resource of strong state and local government issues to control most of people's personal lives. And that kind of built up a soul-like quality and a great deal of independence. But it did not protect the interactions of people from one state to another. And that was a serious failing. So it became, you know, this confederation of states became almost impractical because too much of the second and first parts of God's mind were enacted under an abundance of caution, with not recognizing the third part, where interactions were overly and jealously controlled by state governments, in some cases, city and local governments of various sizes and we'll say, enforcements. Eventually, you couldn't go even sometimes within a state from one place to another, and certainly from one part of a state to a different state, without having some kind of interactional problem. And finally, the founders said to themselves, in some cases, some of them, a couple of them, were out of the picture after the Confederation was founded, but new members came in. And they said, we've got to create a different kind of constitution than leaving so much open for interaction between states and sometimes within, and give general protections to everybody everywhere that are the same. The general protections were an afterthought because the fear was the central government would still eventually take over. So they put in the civil rights protection of the articles in the Constitution as an afterthought. But it was a very important one. The main thing that was done, though, was in almost all interactional issues where the central government was acting on behalf of the people and where it was acting as a liaison and sometimes an arbiter between states, it allowed people to function more freely. And that was what produced it, was the need for freedom and interaction, and the need for interaction between the central government to a greater extent and other governments outside of the United States. All that came together to produce the U.S. Constitution and the United States of America. And this, at first, was reasonably balanced. Reasonably. Not 100%, but it was reasonably balanced. It didn't become truly completed in its balance until an evil that was left in as a part of the central government, which was abhorrent to anything godly, could be resolved. And that ended up killing millions of people, and tens of millions of people suffered enormously as a result of the new slavery. And so when that was left as a state's rights issue, basically, and the federal government refused to protect the rights of some people because it was a proponent of slavery, basically. It said, yeah, those people can be owned by others. It didn't say that exactly, but it didn't say they couldn't be owned, and that was the problem. And there needed to be a new right, if you want to call it that, that people can own people, put into the Constitution. But the point is that left the groundwork for evil. Now, why am I going through this history lesson? To show you what evil can do. If this had been corrected by no later than 1789, and evil couldn't hang its hat on slavery as being the means for destroying life, millions and millions of lives of people would have been saved. The United States would have become a much greater nation. Even today, that would be a true statement. But unfortunately, the people who were in the founders class were too afraid and too unwilling to deal with the fights necessary to keep the union together and at the same time deal with the issue of slavery. Now, lots of people have lots of excuses about this. Well, if Jefferson and others had really forced the hand and made it this and that illegal, they would have had the Civil War just 60 years earlier, but they would have won. The South effectively would have won, and it would have been secession. The United States would have fallen apart. That is the basic excuse used by the founders who later tried to make excuses for that problem, that decision, and most other historians, etc. But the answer was, this is what needed to take place. The states and the people in the country who were willing and able to support freedom for, or emancipation for, but freedom for the slaves, needed to put their money where their mouth was, and they weren't willing to do it. Some were, but most weren't. And if they had been willing to, they could have supported a whole new initiative of industrialization of the South with the financial help of the freer states, while giving education and meaningful jobs to the huge number of slaves, black people, that were not able to just walk out of slavery and be free because they didn't have a lifetime of experience to do that. So their freedom got usurped afterwards anyway, for a while. In the meantime, what they needed to be doing was helping to build up the South instead of fighting them in Congress and keeping them down. And to preserve plantation life by subsidizing the working populations that could collect and deal with the cotton and other crops, unfortunately tobacco as well, and lead the South into a new and better economy, a healthier one by far. This could have been done if there was any will to do it. But unfortunately, that was lacking. So how did evil then come in and use this system in this way? And this is, I want you to realize, this does apply to today. I'm just trying to make a simple thing that a lot of people already know about so that they can relate to it when I get to the more abstract issues of today. Evil, when it is given the opportunity, and there is an inequity in intelligent activity, where there's intelligent activity for some and others are excluded. Evil then goes to those that are excluded and says, join us. How does it do that? Well, it makes up lies. It's very good at this. It tells all those who are disadvantaged, are among those who, by some means, usually their own, this is not true of slavery, by the way, usually of not their own, but that others are doing this to them. In other words, today, or even in the world of the past, most of the time, it told people who even weren't slaves that they were. And then it told the people who were slaves that whatever it took, in whatever means possible, to free itself, this was a practical means. And you ended up with people like John Brown. And so you have all these conditions that I want you to see here that were used. Now, one of the things that was missing was that evil did not have a means of on a wide scale communicating what I just told you. They could do so through newspapers. Telegraph was only partially available and not very good at this. And they didn't have radio or television. They didn't have widely read nationalized newspapers. And a lot of people didn't read it. So we have an interesting scenario that as human minds developed, evil actually has an easier path by using a new means to communicate its nonsense and its lies. And some of that is through, we'll say, the written word, but most of it comes from verbal approaches, using oftentimes to a larger audience, the radio or television. And so this has opened up new areas that could be used in a more mental way that allowed the evil to, we'll say, force a change that couldn't happen before. Before the Civil War, it was not possible to do these things. Even after, until virtually the First World War, evil did not have the proper technology to be able to abuse civilization in such a plan. And even so, it still ended up killing tens of millions of people in this country, in the United States, for those of you who live here and listen to me. And it also has done so in numerous other countries using similar approaches. But today, the new foul method, which started again after the turn of the last century into the 20th century, is propaganda. That's evil's big deal, propaganda, which is just a consistent, saturated, and interwoven series of lies to convince people of large and highly manipulated, quote-unquote, truths, as untruths that are really, they try to make people believe are truths. It can be done in other ways, too. You can do it, I've seen this recently, in motions before courts and other things. If you try to sway by combining the emotional factors with untrue mental ones. And that's what evil does. It's called a common monastic propaganda method. And it's pretty treacherous, and it's highly toxic to life. Now, so evil was given the opportunity, to finish my story about the past, evil was given the opportunity to help destroy, it almost succeeded, the United States by propagating the untruth in the most universal way possible at the time. And that way, now I'm going to probably get some emails on this, was by incorporating it within and also leaving out parts of the truth, incorporating lies within the Constitution of the United States. Then replicating this in nearly half of the state's legislatures and their form of, we'll call it, civilization, which is based upon the Southern motto of abusing the black race and turning people from, it isn't just Africa, you use that term African-American, but really many of these people came from other places besides just Africa. But it doesn't matter. They were black people, and their race originally, we could say, came from Africa. And in any case, the point is that they used our own Constitution. And then there were some terrible court decisions founded upon a weak and wrongful constitution that allowed slavery to grow and to supplant the truth. So that was the first form of propaganda, but it wasn't very effective because they couldn't consistently do it because how many people read the Constitution every day? But nonetheless, we were living under the Constitution, and at that time, we had some forms. Not to say it doesn't have some all the time, but these were big ones. And that leads us now, I'm going to leave that part, the historical part. I think that I made the point there. But from looking at it from side now, I want to talk about God's plan. God's plan is to allow life so much freedom and latitude that it can become evil, but in the challenge to remain virtuous, where it is vastly rewarded, but only over time, it is given the opportunity to choose the quick, fast route of taking from others, destroying life, and becoming powerful, versus becoming spiritual, helping to grow more of life and grow more of God, and have a sincere fondness, love, and appreciation for our own Creator and all those who support that. So these are the, and then you have the intrinsic versus extrinsic rewards. You do get immediate gratification on the spiritual side by following God's plan, because every moment there is an experience of greater love and a sense of greater consciousness and unity with others, while at the same time you recognize and appreciate and give freedom to others so they can grow as individuals at the same time. The balance is absolutely necessary, and today it's lacking in some big ways, but it's critical in God's plan that this is there. And God doesn't want just freedom, but it wants to be enough love so that the freedom is not for just the individual, but if the individual recognizes that if all others aren't free, it is not evil. And by coming to that realization, which is called soul consciousness, you mend or join together the pairs of opposites of individuality versus consciousness, which is so grandly, greatly important. It takes human beings almost to the end of their existence as humans to come to this realization in a universal way and live a whole lifetime or more that way. I attempt to lead my life that way, and I try to assist everybody I come in contact with, and those that I teach, the same concept. But it's a difficult one. And some people still have trouble understanding it or executing it. But even if you're struggling, it's way better than evil. Because evil reverses it. Evil tends to reverse almost everything good does. And we'll talk about some of the equipment it builds in itself to change itself in the next section of the show. But the incredible thing about this is that evil basically is continually seeking to make sure that God's plan does not get executed. And we'll talk about that tomorrow as well. Well, we're going to be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we are talking about evil consciousness and plan for Earth versus God's plan, the big one. Okay, so we got a little, I hope I've given enough an example, et cetera, so we have some idea of what I mean by evil. And some of the more basic elements of evil as it unfolded in relationship to history that people, at least who know about or live in the United States, may have some idea about. So where does this lead us in a more modern sense? Well, today evil has grown in its ability to use the emotional bodies of people, our feelings about things, and connect them in wrong ways to untruths. Sometimes that fool people because they think they are the truth when they're not. And it does this mostly by what some people call spin or propaganda. And it is just a series of lies that are repetitious, support a similar plan of thought, we'll call it, that most people have very strong emotional feelings about, but aren't aware that their feelings are really about a series of untruths, but they conclude, because they feel so strongly about it, that these more limited thoughts that are somewhat conceptual but mostly thought forms or examples of bad concepts are in some way the truth. And many times it's because they have limited, extremely limited idealizations about what these truths are and are not, because they have not thoroughly enough in their minds seen beyond their own, we'll call it, beliefs. Evil's doing this round the clock today, and it's being unusually successful in the last 5-6 years because, unfortunately, there's a change about civilization is weakening because of the change in the way that supports civilization. And so evil is saying, hallelujah, it's time to get out and make a big mess of things. And maybe we can get God off this planet and make everybody on the planet somewhat evil. Now, you could say, well, how in the heck could they ever do that? Because ultimately, they'll end their own life. Well, evil's plan is for Earth to cooperate with larger segments of evil throughout the universe. Not even in just this galaxy, but beyond this galaxy to some even bigger galaxies, but ones that went dark. And its hope is to invoke the darkness to the point where Earth is just the beginning of a whole new darkness that might overcome this galaxy that we're in. It's a pretty tall plan. Chances are not real high, but there's just a lot of safeguards in God's plan for Earth. But nonetheless, this is evil's plan, in part. And evil's plan is to take over the third part of God's mind almost totally by putting in governance, using that word specifically, that controls interactions to an extreme degree, producing a sort of worldwide tyrannical factor. But it's really a bunch of governments that become tyrannical through the loopholes, we'll call it, in God's plan, which have to be there to ensure that we are free and to ensure that we choose to be loving, not we're forced to be loving. There's no such thing. So ultimately, this is the plan of evil. It's going to do this by turning governments into tyrannical dictatorships about the third part of God's mind. It's trying not to do too much about the second part of God's mind. It wants to convince people that it's on the side of love and that it's really doing everything because it wants fairness here and everywhere for all people. So everyone is going to be equal. Equal. Okay, now that sounds like a great idea, right? We're all going to be equal. Utopian. But the problem with it isn't God's plan. God's plan allows for individuality, which means that people can't be equal because some will choose to do things that are destructive for their plans and their selves. And these choices have to be permitted. The only way you make everybody equal is to make everybody enslaved and then lie about it and say, well, that's how you get free. But you get free by making yourself a slave to the state, a slave to the tyrannical government, and then those governments join together and become controlled by an even bigger evil that's here on a worldwide scale. That's a government over government. You say, oh, who's that going to be? Well, they already exist. Yeah, the world court exists. Used to be a pretty good thing, not so much anymore. Worse, in Switzerland, the World Health Organization used to be a pretty good thing. They would guard against some kinds of terrible pandemics and other things. But now they want to control all substances that are used for any purpose that has anything to do with health. It's called Codex. And then they also want to tell each government how medical practice should be. And a lot of other things. Didn't know that? Okay, well, now you do. When did that happen? The last 30 years or so, and in particular the last 20. Okay, so, and then, okay, what about the world economic picture? Well, that's being controlled by several different world pieces of the puzzle. And that is the worst part, because that's where most of the interaction takes place, is through money. Most of it. And the control of money is a big deal. And there's money being controlled by a world banking system, by deciding what monetary system will be used on a worldwide trading system, and by allowing some governments to do unfair things and other governments to do good things to be limited, a whole bunch of stuff. But the most important thing is a thing called redistribution of wealth. The object of evil is to redistribute wealth, taking it from the most creative people and giving the wealth to the least. It is the single greatest weapon evil has in its plan for Earth. Now, a lot of people say, well, I thought redistribution is fairness. You listen to Obama, and he says, yeah, well, here's the bottom line about that. The truth is that redistribution of wealth is the destruction of wealth for all. You lower the standard of living progressively and faster by the greater and greater amounts of redistribution that you do. And nothing lowers it more than giving the wealth first to the government to then sometimes redistribute some of it back to some people. It's a very, very destructive system. And you say, well, that's socialism, isn't it? It sort of is. Socialism can kind of work in very small countries, like Switzerland, or maybe Denmark. But these small countries have to have people who are very homogeneous in their society, their traditions, and what they believe they want their government to do for them. Then it could kind of work for a while. When it stops working is when the country is faced with stress, like from other countries failing, and so, and then it may not work too well because it's not an efficient system in adaptation to new and different crises, even when it's at its best. When it's at its normal state, it's horrible. Okay, so here we have, it isn't just socialism, because it goes way beyond that, because the ultimate goal of evil is tyranny. And not all countries that are socialistic are tyrannical. And not all countries that are tyrannical admit to, or even maybe, socialistic. Here is the problem. When there is built into the system the following mechanisms, you can bet your bottom dollar that evil's at work. One, redistribution of wealth. Two, redirection of creativity from the most creative, which are usually small businesses, but not always, to the least creative, which are usually people that are members of groups of people, not even alone, who work in somewhat repetitious trades and somewhat repetitious types of working environments. Those people have the most amount, we'll call it, of both animus and the least amount of creativity that they're exercising. They may be creative people, they're just not exercising. What else falls into that category of, we'll say, identifying evil using the third part of God's mind? Power. There's a grab for power. Power comes from taking time and energy away from others and using it to benefit a smaller group who are lackeys and cronies and people who call themselves politicians or people in power. And when you see that going on, and it's corruption, of course, at the highest levels, any kind of corruption you see, it's evil. Because it uses that power, the third part of God's mind, to take power from others. It does it by stealing time and energy. And in case you don't know, long ago, I and others have defined time and money as a substitute for time and energy, but in a compressed form. Money is compressed time and energy. When you say, I have all this money. What you're really saying is, I have a lot of compressed time and energy. Yeah. Okay. So, and it's usually done, this is usually done by government. Sometimes it's done by unions and other types of organizations. But the point is that when this takes place, and by the way, I don't want you to think I'm against unions. Some types of unions can be very helpful. It depends on the nature of the creators. I think that a union for actors is particularly helpful in some cases, is because they can be quite creative and they may keep their creativity. But a union for people that are standing on an assembly line may be antithetical to those people because it keeps them locked into a non-creative activity. But to get them out of that non-creative role, it would destroy or at least harm the power of the union. So the unions don't work in the right direction, and they fall into the dark side when they do that. Okay, let's continue. So in looking at this model that I'm building here, which is a pragmatic model, I'm trying to show some practical issues here, right? You can see where I'm headed. Not historical like the first part, but now this is really about us, right? What else can you say is a clear indication that there's evil? Well, we know there's power, we know that this and that. Okay, the final issue gets into direct legislation or edict of taking or removing the rights of people to not only interact, but to, we'll say, live freely. Removal of freedom in more ways than just through interaction is the ultimate plan of evil. It does this usually by fiat to some extent. In the United States, we call those executive orders. But sometimes it does it by manipulating the system so that the safeguards are abolished and more the power becomes centralized in the hands of those that are seeking power and creating corruption through lackeys and people who are the corrupting members of society who buy influence and are willing to give money to get it. Those people may not be evil, by the way. They may be bad people. They may be dark. Evil ones are the ones coming up with the plan to do this and exercising that plan. Okay, so these fundamental issues start looking very, very common when we examine around the globe what's going on. We see there's obviously major darkness and evil in countries like Russia, Red China, North Korea, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan. Sound familiar? A lot of other countries, too. But those countries, many people identify in some ways as having evil connected with them. The problem is, those countries alone cannot take over the world. Why not? Because their systems are already so dark and they're so far down the path of evil that unless they get redistribution of wealth in some way and unless they can do an awful lot of other things that are hard to do without cooperation from the rest of the world, they are isolating themselves and weakening their position. As an example, North Korea can do all it wants to make atomic weapons. It'll starve to death long before it can take over any significant parts of the world. Now, you're going to say, well, what about Red China? Red China is doing better. Red China is redistributing wealth to achieve its goal by the cooperation of the United States. Most of the wealth it accumulates comes through the United States and a few other Western countries. The United States, by far, is way over 70-80% of its wealth derivative through redistribution. You say, well, how are they redistributing? What is going on? Well, they devalue their money and make it easier for them to sell us things. And then they loan us the money by encouraging big government here. They pay people to do this so that these people come in and they get our politicians to be favorable to them, to the Red Chinese, to do several things. That we will expand our government so that we have to borrow money from China to do so. That's what's happening right now. And then at the same time, we buy things that are too cheap from China, but based upon the devaluation of their money, it doesn't hurt them at all. It only hurts us. So in the long run, their economy is growing at a rate about 5 to 10 times larger than us. At the present time, we may be at 2%, they may be at 10, and we may be as low as 1, and they still remain somewhere between 8 and 10. We are getting clobbered. What is the end result of that level of redistribution of wealth? Well, we go bankrupt, and they take us over. Because they're taking the money that the redistribution is, they're not giving it to their people. They're building up an enormous military and other kinds of related activities like spy networks and paying people to be their sponsors here in the United States and just paying off politicians. Yeah, they're directly paying off politicians. In some cases, they're major supporters of these politicians' campaigns. So ultimately, that's what they're doing. They are redistributing wealth to themselves, and in a very conniving and amazingly successful pattern. They are criminals, too, because they break into all of our electronic means of keeping records and knowledge, and they steal it. And they don't recognize any of the laws that we have against people pirating intellectual property. Ultimately, if the plan continues in 10 years, the United States fails. But also, evil is making sure that the United States fails because it's boldly, in the last few years, taken over the national government through the Obama administration and has upped all of these means that I've discussed of taking power and using it for the destruction of life. The bottom line would be the destruction of life. Also, the Obama administration is grossly working against the interests of the United States to become, have the United States controlled by the United Nations and all the other things I talked about in a play to supplant our own Constitution, and in its place have other governments that are even much more tyrannical eventually take us over. There still will be a United States, which you will not recognize. And we're almost there. As a matter of fact, I predict that if Obama is reelected, This show will be a foreshadowing of the next 4 months. All right, so we have, this is evil's plan. Now, evil is working on a world scale. I talk about the United States because many of my listeners are here, but not everybody is. And it is important here to recognize that I'm not anti-Democrat. I'm anti the administration that is presently functioning under the name of Democrat, okay? This is not about being in a particular political party. Democrats aren't evil. neither are Republicans, neither are libertarians. All those who seek freedom and liberty, and all those who understand the wisdom of giving and knowing how to give so that others can become better givers and remain free, and you don't take the freedom away from some, giving it to those who will only abuse it or not use it correctly. That is, those people are the ones that I soundly support. I don't care where they come from. I don't care what they call themselves. It's really not relevant in this situation. The parties, as we recognize them here in the United States, have just taken the two sides of God. Republican is the first part of God's mind. Democrat is the second. And then they bicker among themselves which one is more important. Neither has a good founding on what's right. You say, well, what about the libertarians? Don't they got it right? Yes, sort of. They are probably closer to being right than the other two in the sense of truth. Their execution of it is wrong. What I mean by that is that you can't just believe that the Constitution is enough to guarantee the rights of all. If it were, we wouldn't be where we are today. Evil can go around the Constitution every which way you can think of. A single written document isn't sufficient to do that. We need a lot more. But at any rate, that's a whole other show. But it's an interesting thought. So, looking at it from the standpoints that I've just suggested, we're going to take a little break here in a minute. I want you to think about this from this point of view. If we all are on the same page, that we want there to be the existence of God here on earth in its plan, and the elimination of evil and what it plans for, then tonight's show will make a lot more sense. So I want you to consider that proposition instead of saying, well, he's some libertarian now or something. I'm not anything. I'm trying to teach you about evil tonight. Evil does not come in some Democratic or Republican, libertarian, Green Party, whatever kind of form. It comes as its own thing. And I would also say this. Not all people who are members of the Communist Party are necessarily evil, but communism itself is. Isn't that weird? We'll talk about that in a minute. All right. So let me just mention something to you. And I don't know if you know anything about different kinds of eye doctors, etc. Some of the problems people have, especially when they age, is that so many different parts of the vision in a person can be affected that you can make one thing better and another thing doesn't get better, make it worse. In terms of vision, there's a lot of reasons people don't see very well. But basically, technology is starting to address all of these things in ways that are truly both innovative and creative and, for a lot of folks, solutions. And they don't necessarily require surgery. Surgery can have its benefits, but it has many drawbacks, especially as you grow older, because you correct with surgery usually one or two things which stand in the way when you get older of a third thing or a fourth thing. And between all those, it just doesn't balance itself out for the whole lifetime of a person. It's good for 5, 10, 15 years, and then suddenly you say, gee, I wish I hadn't done that because it didn't work out for me this way or that way. Also, surgery is very irreversible for most folks. So you can't. So that is another issue that I have with it. Now, my suggestion is if you are having problems in being able to get the kind of vision you're looking for, there are some new kinds of lenses, contact lenses actually, that work differently than prior ones, in several different ways. made out of different kinds of materials that can allow you to be able to see in most circumstances, nearly ideally, most of the time. And you can say, well, I tried contacts 10, 15 years ago. They were uncomfortable, couldn't wear them long, irritated my eye, and then I couldn't see very well this way or that way. I finally gave up, and I tried glasses. Glasses give me a headache. Sometimes they're too heavy on my nose. Sometimes they get in the way. I can't even look through a pair of binoculars with them very well. Yeah, you get a lot of stuff like that. And they're always in the way, no matter what you want to do. They're seemingly in the way. And you don't have perfect vision with them. 5, 10, 15%, depends upon the glasses, of the light gets reflected off or doesn't make it through the lens, the glasses. You lose some light, and the light is vision. And the other thing is that you lose your peripheral vision to a large extent, and you don't see very well anywhere when you move your eyeball. If you got to kind of move your head if you want to have perfect vision in every direction, so it has a lot of limitations. Glasses are just not great either. But there are some new contact lenses that are worth considering. Not for everybody, but probably a majority of people that have had trouble and couldn't use them. Lenses before, can today. How do I know this? I'm going to go into a place called the Eye Center, and there's a fellow over there, a very humble guy. I like him because of his humility as much as anything else. His name is Dr. David Stacey. And the people there are just down-to-earth folks. They have some of the most reasonable prices in the valley for some of the most expensive procedures that you can imagine. They're very affordable, and I applaud him and his assistants, Lorraine and Christy, for all the work that they do trying to provide service to people who, in many cases, can't afford some of the things that they do offer, but they make it so. They're over in Chandler, if you know where that is, Chandler, Arizona, of course, and that if you have a chance and you live anywhere in the state of Arizona, or any if you come here or whatever, you might want to look them up, 2974 North Alma School Road, Suite 3. They're really a place that you could just walk into almost and make an appointment. It's just simple, and they try to make themselves as available as possible. So you don't have to wait as long to get to see them, and you're less money, and they offer a variety greater than most other places in terms of solutions. I mean, they've got some things I had never heard of, and I thought I'd heard of everything before. It's on the southwest corner of Alma School and Elliott, if you know where that is, in Chandler. David Stacey, O.D., give him a call, and the phone number is, you ready? 480-899-0188. That's 480-899-0188. And, of course, if you forget that number, you can give me a call or anybody I'm assisted with, and they'll have the number available, and we'll get it to you. We can email it to you if you can't remember. We'll email it to you. Okay? Check that out, and let's go back to talking about our last stop, which is talking about evil's plan. So part of this whole story, then, really comes down to how come all this is going on around us and nobody seems to know. Well, there are some that know. There really are. But the numbers seem so small. They're so small compared to the people who don't seem to be aware of what's happening. How is this possible? Remember I talked about propaganda. The more egotistical people are, the more they're susceptible to propaganda. I'm going to explain that to you. So, it works like this. Propaganda is very redundant, and it keeps the same pitch and the same argument day in, day out, over and over again. It doesn't rely on the truth, and it creates its own. And people who are egotistical are not thinkers, per se. They have certain ideas that propaganda appeals to because it tailors itself to fit in with those ideologies. And and prejudices that people have and their emotional system so that it fits their feelings. It's completely wrong in most ways, but it fits those feelings. And so to an egotistical person, or worse, an arrogant person, they don't want to be thinking. They want to believe they're superior to others. They want to believe they are in with the in crowd, so to speak, and that they are highly more knowledgeable than anyone else, and that they are more effectively powerful than other people based upon being special. So evil's plan is to create doctrines that sell that bill of goods to those people who are willing to vote for it, support it, and send it their money as well. The components of what I just said. So those people who are practicing evil in their governance or in other ways, could be, again, through union, through many different sources, what they propose is the following. Hey, join us, we're the smart folks. Those other people are the dummies. They continually character assassinate and destroy the credibility of others while making themselves seem to be the great good thinkers who are doing only good for others, who have all the concern and care for the poor, and who seek to only bring equality and fairness here to earth. They fight old causes and change them into their message. The causes could be the prior abuses among the general population, including women, against women, making them second-class citizens. That mostly was over with 20 years ago, but it's still going on some places. But the point is that this becomes a cause. And then they'll take the cause of any kind of racial inequity, as it may seem. And they expand on it. They take old ones, like old being the civil rights movement of the 60s in particular, leading into parts of the 70s, and they make it like a modern version today, though it's happening everywhere all the time. And then they go further. They make people believe that they not only are the more intelligentsia, but they are elite, and that's a good thing. They're elite because they don't believe in God. Oh, they put on a show. They go to church on occasion and do things like that. But the most important thing is the hidden message is, all you folks who doubt God, come join us. It's okay. We'll pretend, and you can pretend, that we're all God-fearing people. But in reality, we'll make fun of the God-fearing people, and we'll laugh as we control them and take over their country. Yeah, join us. We know what we're saying. We know what you're doing. We'll wink and nod at each other. We know. You could say, well, how did I get away with that? Why don't the people who believe, which who are in the majority, why don't they do something about it? Well, because they get confused. They think, well, they're just expressing their viewpoint, so we let them express it, and, you know. But with propaganda, it's not a viewpoint. It's an evil plan. And it has to be exposed as being evil so that others can see it for what it is, rather than, well, they're just expressing their own opinions. It's freedom of speech. Well, I'm not suggesting that we limit that speech. I'm suggesting we just expose the truth about it. It's only the light of truth that can really work in that kind of situation. You can't win by just pretending that you're more noble than them and won't say it or do anything about it. If you aren't willing to get dirty and fight, evil's going to trounce on you like you won't believe. They're already doing it. All right. What is the other seductive element? Well, they make people feel better. First of all, they reward people who follow. Why? Evil rewards those initially. They give much more than they get initially. They really do. But it's a very short-lived experience. It might be in a matter of weeks or months that it goes away. Initially, it sounds like you're getting health care, free health care. It's great. Man, everybody sign up. Just give all your freedom. You can't have the doctors we told you could get. You keep your doctor. Well, that's all a lie. Of course, the whole plan's based upon a lie. This isn't health care. This is taking over the country. This is redistribution of wealth in very strange ways, but very effective. This is getting closer to worldwide domination of this country. This is getting closer to the government telling you what you can and can't own, what you can and can't buy, what you can and can't do. Hey, I'm against sugar, candy, you name it. But I will stand in full force against anyone who tries to remove those choices from anybody. But health care, when it's being paid by the all, has to be judicious about those things. We can't have people buying candy in place of lunch. We're going to have to fine them for doing it. And then the children are just going to have to take it out of the lunchroom. And then the parents that send it to school with them will send the child services over and threaten to take their kids away. We'll teach their kids to go against their parents and turn them in. Yeah. And we'll also be proponents for freedom for those people who want to do drugs and other stuff. That's okay. Let them do that, because then their consciousness will go down. It'll be easier for evil to take more. Let them do that. But am I a proponent for laws against drugs? Not exactly. No, I'm not. What I'm a proponent for is for people to have the freedom to choose and to do those things that are helpful. I think it's okay for people to have the freedom to decide to use drugs, you know, at least illicitly or whatever way they can get them, I guess, but have severe penalties for those who implement sale of them in some respects, and at the same time make it so that people who use any substance or anything who do harm, they have extreme results. Imprisonment. But don't imprison people for just doing the behavior itself without being grossly irresponsible. So if someone says, yeah, I'm not gonna get in my car and drive because the marijuana is kind of floating my head around, that's okay. Don't drive. But if you do drive and you hurt somebody, that's going to be bad news. Those are the things that I suggest as a possible way of dealing with that sort of situation. I don't want to get too deep into the individuality of these issues, but I'm trying to show that evil is a means to an end, and the end is the end of God. God's plan is for God's growth to continue indefinitely and for all participate in it to immensely benefit from it. Evil's plan is, in effect, to usurp the role of God as a means of destroying God. If you recall, in the Declaration of Independence, which in some loose ways is actually incorporated into the Constitution of the United States, it states that all power comes from the Creator and is endowed to human beings and does not go through any government at all. Evil's redefining of the Declaration of Independence is the Declaration of Dependence, and it seeks to have a government that makes each of us dependent upon it and forced to obey it. And only, it only has the power to control us. That no, we have no rights, we have no power other than that which is distributed through the government. That ultimately leads to tyranny and is the brand of people. It's the means. All right. So, I hope that this kind of gives you some flavor. And I hope it doesn't sound too political, because I know some of these things are espoused by various political agendas of various people. But I'm trying to look at it from a different standpoint. And maybe it sounds sometimes too similar. But that's because maybe those other folks have got some of the truth. Not all. How in the heck are we going to combat this? Since evil is being incredibly successful, it already has most of the government of the United States. Now, in the last election, it's true, the House was taken back by mostly Republicans, and so it's a part of government doesn't exist any longer to grow evil. But it doesn't take evil very long to grow. It takes a long time to undo what it has done. So be aware that you give it even a small chance, and it's going to run with the ball, as they say, and do tremendous demands. And it's such a hallmark of how it functions. Swiftly and with little knowledge or fanfare, so that most of the people don't know what's happening. Just does it literally in the middle of the night and on a Friday night. It's just good at that sort of stuff. It's really good at it. Okay, so let's talk about how to solve this, because the solution is God's plan, okay? God already knew this is going to be going on, and strangely, Earth specifically was designed to see if God's plan can beat out evils when it's working in its most malicious manner, its most malignant manner, as propaganda in a monastic and joined comma or emotional sense right here in this time on Earth. And it's also time when egotism has grown enormously, because the third ray civilization has been focused, the throat chakra, for 675 years on Earth. Plus, in addition to that, the human race has reached the zenith of lower mental and somewhat higher mental development. We're really peaking, especially in the lower part, and that gives us, unfortunately, leads us to be egotistical very easily. So there's much more egotism, much more, than at any time in the past. Somewhat less emotionalism by some people, but the desires of people are just as strong, if not stronger. So a thing called fixed emotionalism, or fixed desires, is more prevalent, but overall emotionalism may be slightly less, or somewhat less, by some people. So, how did God come up with this? Because it seems like everything's stacked against God's plan working here on Earth, and that's the whole point of the experiment. Now, one of the, we'll call it the lower parts of God, is a great being who used to, went through development and became a great being through its own doing, and that being is in control, so to speak, of Earth, and has gone along with God's plan. So God doesn't have a direct thing going on here, because it's kind of just a planet. I mean, whole universe, and God doesn't intervene. God intervenes only through others who carry through with its plan. It's not going to come down with a bolt of lightning and boom, kill all the evil. Now, some people believe that. I know there's religions that say that, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. Instead, the test is for all of us to, or most of us, or majority of us, to awaken to the evil and stand directly, shoulder to shoulder, against it, and to reveal it to all others in every way possible, and to declare what evil is and to show people when it's happening so they can do something themselves. That's part of God's plan, is that the few awaken the many. Over time, the few become the many, and this is the whole idea. Will we be successful? Well, there are several ways that we can be successful. The first is to, besides recognizing that there is evil, to recognize the evil before it enacts the next 20, 30, 50,000, whatever it is, actions that are going to be destructive to God. We have to slow down the march here. Now, what can you do to do that? Well, you have to inform a lot of other people, like about the show or so, whatever. Whatever you find works, I don't care. But we need to be more informed. And then through that awareness, consciousness has to be built by communication that is on its spiritual side, much more open and free, without a lot of ideologies in place. It'd be very hard to do this going to some heavily ideological meeting or something. Everybody's there charged with their own illusions and their own, we'll say, agenda. It's best when done in a neutral ideological setting and give people some ideas that would be helpful to replace that which is. One principle I like is to promote government that promotes freedom. So any law that removes freedom has to have a compensatory side to it that increases more freedom overall, or it is a evil, moving towards an evil side. It has to truly increase freedom for as many as possible. And you cannot remove basic freedoms from anybody. Basic freedoms are those things that we talked about at the beginning of the show, but also they involve the, we'll say, agreed upon rights that we all get from our Creator. If you want to know about them, read the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. There you can gain some understanding of some of the practical sides of things. People have to become boisterous. They have to let others know they're not alone. The greatest weakness that God's plan has is that God does not promote it. It has to be self-discovered and then promoted, not God promoted and discovered. You say, well, what about religion? Well, that's not God's plan. That's an expression of human beings interpreting some parts of God's plan, oftentimes in imbalanced ways, and sometimes completely untruthful ways, other times very truthful. The point is that that's the difficulty there. That's not God promoting itself. It's humans promoting some things about God. Some of them are true, some not. That's the difference. Well, if evil's so promoting of itself in its plan, how does God's plan win? God's plan ultimately wins because every choice that evil makes weakens it. It tries to not make new choices, and it tries to just redundantly do the same thing over and over again, especially lies. So what you've got to do is force evil to make up new and different and creative lies. Not that you're going to force evil to tell the truth, it won't. But every time it has to make up a new lie, it weakens its ability to create better lies. It makes worse lies up and gets caught in. So you got to expose the old lies, even though you're always going to be behind the eight ball because new ones will keep coming. That's okay. The new ones have to be more and more creative, and that's dangerous to evil. Evil doesn't like creating. It likes to redundantly do things over and over again, just the way it used to do, because that protects it. It works with what it thinks worked before, and it doesn't have to put a lot of energy on the line that it may have taken away from it, or may in some way be, we'll say, defused, destroyed, and then it's out a tremendous amount. It hates that. It doesn't want to be creative. It wants you to be lulled into its propaganda and its fixed desires, or call them glamours, to connect with that so that you follow it blindly. Blindly. When it can't do it like that, then it loses its efficiency and it starts literally losing more consciousness than it can afford. Then it can't even make an evil plan very effectively. And that's when it's good for it, because then you're destroying the evil itself. What else is in God's plan? Well, God's plan ultimately knows, God knows, that evil can, in the long run, not succeed. But in the short run, it can do an awful lot of havoc. And the universe is dependent upon not a short or long run. It's dependent upon freedom in order to grow God. And since evil is against freedom, severely against freedom, then overall, evil has to be defeated by all of the means that it uses to obstruct freedom from others. It comes out with infinite, almost, numbers of lies, but they are still repetitious, and to create new ones within those almost infinite lives that it's already used is a very great and difficult task. The more we reveal the lies of the existing, the more that evil doesn't grow itself and finds it more difficult to fight against God's plan. What's also in God's plan is that there is a huge amount of love of life, a huge amount of charity and giving, and a huge amount of wisdom involved in all of us. So you don't give things to people that use them to lose freedom and destroy their consciousness and then become unintelligent in their activities. And that's what's wrong with most forms of welfare. It's what's wrong with many of the existing models that are government enacted and that also get into redistribution in most cases. The real bottom line is, if you want to help people, help them to think and then show them ways to be more efficient in their actions, be a model for it. And the results can be huge, huge. Thinking more leads to more spiritual contact, because spiritual thought is whole thought, or more whole. Evil thought is very unwhole. Unwhole thought. Unwhole thought is much more easily shown to be unwhole, provided you don't allow people to constantly be barraged by propaganda without you intervening, saying, hey, wait a second, that's what some bullshit. Here's the truth. Let me show you. You need to do it yourself. You need to get other people to help understand it through you. And also you need to help direct them to the sources to help you develop more consciousness. It might be listening to this show as an example. It may be reading some materials that not only I've wrote, but many other people in the field of ageless wisdom as a metaphysical principle base that is highly God-centered. That's where it's at. And we all could be doing that. Okay, another area of how to destroy evil's plan is to be willing to sacrifice any material thing or outcome for the purpose of liberating people and allowing them to have freedom. It's a difficult thing. Remember, going back to the story, the beginning of the show, if the people of the United States, and particularly the leaders, our founding fathers and sisters, brothers and mothers, had been more sacrificial, willing to give up some of their wealth or even significant portions of it in mass, and willing to allow more influence and power for states that they didn't appreciate or like that much, like the South. If those folks had done that, evil could have been defeated to a large extent, and there would have been no civil war, and huge amounts of evil throughout the world would have been disassembled because people would have looked at the amazing things that have been done and were done since that time in the United States. We didn't take that path, and we screwed up. And now, karmically, we have the world to pay for it. The reason there's so much tyranny in the world today is because countries like the United States failed, not because we succeeded. It's still a great country, don't get me wrong, but more on principles and spirit than it is on intelligent activity and actions. Our actions are oftentimes lacking. And that doesn't mean all the people have fought in wars for freedom, involved with for the United States, are necessarily not good people. They are. They've done tremendous things. They're heroic. They have given sometimes their lives, but certainly many other parts of their existence for the benefits of people they never even heard of before in some circumstances. It's a great thing. Why isn't it enough? Because there's offsetting karma. Karma is kind of like a plus and negative system. National karma is very difficult to get balanced and effective. Too much of the time, there's a lack of sacrifice by most people, with a minimal amount of sacrifice by a few, and by a very few number, an amazing amount of sacrifice. That's the kind of scale it's on, and that just doesn't work. We need less sacrifice, but by the majority of people, and that will change things around. Major part of God's plan. I don't know how close we are right now, but I don't think it's that close. And how long it might take to correct it is a whole other issue. It's something so relevant that it is almost too obvious. And people shirk about it all the time because nobody is telling you, including God, that you must do any sacrifice. It needs the quality of self-realization and self-actualization to be effective. And that's where our biggest problem is. We have too few people that are self-actualizing, self-realization about God and all that I've talked about tonight to make God's plan effective at this time. And it's why evil's plan continues to be in the forefront too often. Now, can God's plan succeed? Since this sacrifice thing seems to be such a big deal, and we're not really making it in a lot of ways. Yes, because there are, we'll say, special circumstances that change the landscape and make it easier for God's plan to be enacted on. Some of these are natural disasters. Some of these are man-made, so to speak, disasters. And that's when the clock can be reset. Karma can take a shift. There's a possibility for redemption and for great levels of spiritual, we'll say, enlightenment. Some of these natural disasters are actually not so natural. They are the results of energies imbalances in the Earth itself, and sometimes in even energies extraterrestrial outside of Earth. It's incumbent that we recognize that. But that's a tough one because it's so esoteric. What do you mean hurricanes can be caused by the thinking of people? That's ridiculous. Yeah, see, that's the problem. Lots hidden. Okay, God's plan ultimately is done through grace. After everything I just said, I was really talking mostly about the physical world. God's plan can be saved by the grace of God, which comes through the way that God designed the spectrum of each human lifetime. Human beings are most selfish and most in illusion in the physical world, which is the shortest part of their life. They then go on to live in the astral world, and because of time dilation, they live many more years than they live while they're physically alive on average. And during that time, it's easier for them to see evil and to understand it, and their consciousness grows. All the things we're talking about improve upon. And people usually are not as severely affected by their feelings. And you could say, well, I thought when people go to the astral world, they don't have any physical feelings. They just have those emotions. It's going to be more exaggerated. Well, yes and no. Having the feelings gives you more awareness to do something about them. So over time, people become more and more aware of what's wrong with them, and they're more willing to change it. And when they first get to the astral world, their senses were not used that much while they were physically alive. And so those senses are fresh again, that they've picked up some wisdom during physical life in which they can borrow some of that and use it while they're living astrally. And with the increased awareness, make great strides in moving towards a more spiritual life. That's God's grace. He designed it, or it designed it that way. It's a great thing. No doubt about it. And the grace goes even further. This is even more obscure, though. Eventually, we all are going to live in the middle world. Well, everybody except evil people are going to live in the astral world. I mean, in the middle world. What's so great about living in the middle world? Well, the mental world is constantly bathed in truth. Truth becomes it's the virtue of the mental world. It becomes the new light. See, the astral world is love. That's a great light. But truth is what completely does in evil. Evil's greatest Achilles heel is the light of truth. No greater weapon can be employed than truth. And no greater means of using the truth can be employed than sacrifice. Especially if one's, we'll call it fixed desires, or any other desire to get in life. So truth is the bottom line. We get the grace of truth by getting a life that's even longer to some extent than the astral life in the mental world. And during that process, truth is continuously self-revealed through experiences that were designed by the Creator to make it so, so that we recover and come back to being our souls before we rejoin with that being as one. And the benefits we get are because we chose as a soul to come to this hellish nightmare place called the physical earth to face an almost impossible enemy to beat, evil. And in this world, we get the best rewards afterwards in terms of grace so that we can build back to who we were before we sacrificed so much to live in the physical realm. The recovery comes from death, not life. Death of the senses that effectively created the greatest illusion and mind. That's the physical ones. This is God's plan. God's plan has in it a very long solution for an incredibly short-acting and quickly developing problem of evil. Evil is faster, in some ways much more efficient, but ultimately pays the price. Because ultimately, no matter how hard it tries, it loses a little consciousness as it lives, and eventually that loses some sense or awareness. And the most important thing is evil cannot develop more senses except by power. Power comes from control of others, and that control is reduced by the others eventually outliving evil in other realms, some of them that evil never gets to, and finds truth, and the truth trickles down, and eventually, over time, evil cannot keep enough power going to overcome its own degradation of sense. The power was keeping its senses together, but in the meantime, in real terms, if you take all that power away, instead of stealing the senses of others, once it stops stealing those senses, it's left with what really remains as a sense less than human, much less than human. It may be down to a very backward and extremely limited animal, or a plant. And in some worlds, but not here yet, a mineral. And living your life as a rock for a million years with the consciousness of a human during that time cannot be much fun. But worse, in some circumstances, would be living multiple lifetimes as an ant and a worm, or maybe a dandelion, and going through that with the consciousness and the inability to effectuate any activity outside of the abilities of the limited sense of the thing you're in, that's the ultimate imprisonment. You're imprisoned by the senses and body of the organism that you live within, but with the limited consciousness of a human or semi-human. Sure, the evil being is not fully conscious the way more advanced peoples are, but they're still somewhat human in consciousness. And they suffer immensely by the losses from the relative terms of consciousness they had to the absolute terms of consciousness they have that they cannot act upon within the extreme limitations of awareness and sense and action of the creatures they inhabit at that time. They're born into it. Yes, they are born millions of times. And it takes millions and millions of years for some dark masters to eventually come back to even the human stage. That's God's plan, and hopefully it has made some sense to you tonight. There's a lot more that can be said about it, but I'm out of time. So I want you to consider this, that each of us has an opportunity, and we listen to the show on the Internet, to participate in this and to do something to rid the planet of evil and its plan for Earth and replace it with God's. Until next week, this is the Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.